This is a rebellion, isn't it?
I call it aggressive negotiations.
The garbage will do!
Hi, welcome to episode 3 of the Trash Compactor podcast, our monthly podcast about the Star Wars fandom from a female perspective. I'm Roan, and I'm here with...
MC.
This month, we're doing another character-focused episode, and we're going to be talking about one of the newest additions to the Star Wars universe, everyone's favorite scavenger, Rey. I know I was so excited just to see her in the movie for one thing, but like... everything about her. I came out of the theater so hyped because of Rey.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, we'll be talking more about this later, but Rey was just, she was, like we've called her in the episode title, she was a ray of hope.
I think what summed it up for me the best, and I know other people have told this story too, but when I heard it, I literally almost cried. As I was walking out of the theater the first time, there was a little girl who was walking out with her mom, and the little girl was just going on and on and on about how cool Rey was. And mommy, she's a girl. It was the best thing. And I was so jealous because I was like, God damn it. We didn't have a character like that. We didn't get a Rey. Darn it.
Well, we did get a Leia. So, I mean, yes. that's not bad. I mean, yeah. But,
you know, I just think about all the times that we tried to play Star Wars on the playground, and every girl
wanted to be Leia, because what else was there?
You had to be Leia, because what else were you going to be? I remember distinctly, surprise, surprise, wanting to be Luke, and having my...
Really? You?
Yeah.
Never.
And having my male friends being like, you can't do that, you have to be Leia. And I remember thinking... I'm not pretty enough to be Leia. I'm a fat little kid. I can't be Leia.
Aww.
But for some reason, I didn't make that connection with Luke. Which is an interesting... No, never mind. I'm not going to go there because that's like a big digression about gender roles that... Yeah, whatever. But yeah, I mean, we didn't have this character where we could be like, okay, I get the lightsaber now and you have to be rescued or whatever. Which is why I was so surprised when, of course, I came home and got online expecting to find, like, everyone going, that was so awesome! And I did find that, but, you know, when I started hearing the whole thing about how Rey was such a Mary Sue.
I really think a lot of this comes down to Ghostbuster syndrome. There's a lot of dude bros who are really uncomfortable with the fact that there are women coming in and claiming something that was theirs to begin with, because female fans have always been in the Star Wars fandom.
Well, and the thing too, and there is a post on Tumblr going around, and we will link to it. I actually am in this particular subthread because every time I would see people call Rey a Mary Sue, it would make steam come out of my ears because, come on, we are talking about a universe where Anakin Skywalker was literally a virgin birth. He was birthed by the Force. And when he was, 9 years old, he, like, just accidentally flies a plane right exactly where it needs to go and accidentally destroys a droid control strip.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there's Luke, who we've established how much I adore Luke Skywalker, but come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I am somebody who knows quite a lot about Mary Sue. I've written Mary Sue characters. I will own up to that fact. And I mean, it's not only in Star Wars, I've written it in other fandoms because that's a rite of passage when you're, you know, a 13-year-old girl writing fan fiction. And past that, I don't know if a lot of our listeners know this, but I was the writer on Ensign Sue Must Die, which was a Star Trek parody comic.
Which is fantastic.
Thank you. But I've spent a lot of time with the Mary Sue character. And, well, I mean, the thing is, the character is a parody to begin with. It was the creation of a woman named Paula Smith, who was writing a parody of bad Star Trek self-insert fic, where you have your young, capable character who absolutely takes over the story and, you know, falls in love with multiple characters and dies a tragic death. And it's, I've read the story. It's a ridiculous story. It's overwrought and, you know, melodramatic. And that's what makes, that's what the character is. It's not the fact that she exists. It's what she does.
But, you know, the funny thing is, if you have, and I know people have said, oh, but there's a Gary Stu thing too, but it's really not. Because
No.
If you have a male character who is very young and who is just amazing at everything and is better than everybody else at everything, and every single female character, assuming there are any female characters, fall in love with him or at least are sexually attracted to him, you call him the hero. I mean, like...
Yeah, you call him Batman.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, Batman is an extreme example.
With the tragic past,
uh-huh.
Handsome looks, intelligent, lots of money. Everyone falls in love with him. Batman's a fucking Mary Sue if there ever was one.
Wish fulfillment for the author, probably.
Oh, yeah. Look at Luke Skywalker. His name is Luke S.
And Mark Hamill actually is on record as saying that he knew he was playing George Lucas, essentially.
Yeah. And a lot of initial drawings from Ralph McQuarrie, the heroic character in that, looked quite a bit like George Lucas if George Lucas was, like, hitting the gym.
But, you know, when guys do self-insert characters, it's art. And when women do it, it's fanfic.
I've always felt that the Mary Sue character is actually, it's a learning tool.
Oh, it totally is.
Yeah, there's absolutely, when it comes to fan fiction, there is nothing wrong with writing original characters, because writing original characters is the first step to writing your own stuff. Now, I'm not saying that everybody has to write their own stuff, but, you know, it's nice when you start to make that transition, because I know a lot of people want to make that transition.
Yeah.
And also, characters usually exist to serve a story. They exist to serve a specific story. And the problem that people are having with Rey is that they're feeling that she's taken over the story. The only thing is, this is the story that's being told.
I was going to say, that's what a main character does. They take over the story.
I mean, just look at the Star Wars movies. If they were done in actual chronological order, you would have a shit ton of people bitching and moaning about how Luke had taken over from Anakin and Obi-Wan.
Oh, that's funny.
I mean, you really can't argue about it the other way, because it's like, oh, well, Luke wasn't born yet. But if they had done the prequel trilogy, and I think, while a lot of people had problems with Anakin, not a lot of people had problems with Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan was kind of like an exception. People seemed to like him.
Well, we already knew him. He wasn't new.
Yeah, but just imagine if George Lucas had done those movies first and then gone on to do the original trilogy. Everybody would have been like, well, why isn't Obi-Wan handling this? Why is he just, like, standing in the background and then getting cut down by Darth Vader? I mean, we have this whiny-ass kid.
You know what? People are saying that now about the sequel trilogy.
Yeah, this is exactly what it is.
Yeah, I know a lot of people are really upset that the original trio is not playing a bigger role in the sequel trilogy. And, I mean, it's exactly what you're describing. That's not the story now. They are not the focus of the story. They are there to support the story.
Yeah, they are part of the story. But this is how these kinds of stories progress. This is a saga. This is, you know, an epic spanning generations. And that means each part of the story is going to have a new main character because it's a new generation. Now, we've seen Rey, and I know people are like, oh, well, she was on a planet her entire life. And, you know, how was she able to learn how to fly? Well, they actually do address that some of the ancillary books. Now, I know some people will argue that if it's not in the movie, it doesn't count. But they do establish in the new canon that Rey worked with flight simulators.
Yeah, see, but here's the thing. And this is, again, in that Tumblr post that we're going to link to. Nobody questioned that Luke was an excellent pilot.
Exactly.
We never saw him fly until he was in the X-Wing.
Yeah.
And no one ever said, hey, how did this kid who never left Tatooine learn how to be such a great pilot that he could go into a combat situation
and kick ass? We see Luke in a more extreme situation than we ever see Rey.
Yes. And we see Rey, like, knock the Falcon around as she's trying to shake off.
She fucks up a lot. Like, I mean, I'm surprised the Falcon was able to get off Jakku.
And yet,
I mean, she messes up.
The producers and the creators knew that they would have to go in and fill in a backstory for why Rey knew how to fly.
Yeah.
Now, some of that you could probably say is that audiences are a little more savvy now and we look for that sort of thing. But I think a lot of it is also because Rey is a woman. They knew that they would have to defend her capabilities, whereas with a guy, you would just go, oh, he's the hero. Of course he knows how to do that.
Yeah. We also have the issue of her force sensitivity. But the thing is, I felt it was very clear in the story that Rey has had experience with the force already and that Kylo Ren is almost unlocking something that is already there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And also that she is drawing upon his experiences, which granted that does, you know, suggest a lot of power, but do you know what? Anakin is, you know, born of the force.
Right. And I mean, again, this is the hero. You expect your hero to be higher powered than, you know, even like quote unquote, the average force user, which I'm sure there are average force users. We're just not making movies about them.
This happens all the time in all sorts of media. Your hero character is going to be more capable than the normal person. I mean, look at the first Harry Potter. The first time he's on a broom, he's able to, you know, fly perfectly and, you know, grab, it wasn't a snitch, but it was basically the Golden Snitch. He was like a perfect flyer at the time. Right. Oh, by the way, I'm a huge Harry Potter nerd, so I will bring it up at times just for comparisons to things.
It makes good sense. Yes.
Yeah, well, because Harry Potter's a major Mary Sue if you were actually using these criteria.
But, you know, because he's a guy, he's just the hero.
Exactly. Well, we've already had accusations of Jen Erso being a Mary Sue, and all we've got
seen, like,
is
30 seconds
trailer.
Of her.
And why? And here is the reason why people are thinking that she's a Mary Sue. Because she acts like Han Solo.
See, and that's why I'm like already halfway in love with her. I mean, because
I know, right?
Who doesn't want a female Han Solo? I mean, I do.
Yeah, no, she's got this roguish personality that is so much like Han Solo or, you know, Malcolm Reynolds. The basic space pirate kind of role that is, you know, become a trope.
Yeah.
It's rarely been applied to a female character and people are threatened by that.
Oh, I'm not.
I'm turned on by it.
I'm like, oh, she can threaten me. That's totally fine. I'm sorry. For those of you just tuning in, we do have probably a queer agenda as well as a feminist agenda. Sorry. Too late now. You're stuck with us. But yeah, I think Mary Sue, for a certain segment of the population, has basically come to mean any powerful female character who is not wearing a cat suit.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Any character that is more powerful than that is threatening to male characters and that is not in service to them.
Yeah, because I mean, Black Widow is pretty fucking powerful. We all know that, but I don't think I've ever heard anyone call her a Mary Sue. And I think that's partly because she's been so sexualized.
It's not only that she's sexualized, it's that she is always in service to a male character. Yeah, I mean, you see her In Iron Man 2, she is serving Nick Fury. In the two Captain America movies, she is, you know, the sidekick of Captain America. Even in the one where she's on a different side than him, she still kind of feels like a more sidekick kind of role.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to the Avengers movies, she's, you know, she's kind of love interesty. The first one, they have like this weird love interest thing with Hawkeye, which then they completely ignore to turn it into a love interest for the Hulk. But we're going off into a tangent because I am also a huge Marvel geek.
Hey, again, seriously, I love Black Widow, but it's very interesting to see the accusations that don't get thrown her way. Now,
yeah.
If they ever do make a Black Widow movie, I'll be really curious to see if people start going, oh God, it was such a bad movie, they turned her into a Mary Sue.
Oh God, they will definitely be doing that because I know what they would, I would know what they would do in a Black Widow movie.
They turned her into a hero.
They would yeah, they would turn her into a hero and they would give her a tragic backstory. And fanboys would just be like, wait, what is this? You know, why isn't she like dancing around in, you know, a cat suit the entire time? I mean, like, there's a lot of punishment that happens to a strong female character. I mean, we can look at our very own fandom to see that. If we look at Princess Leia, who was an incredibly capable character in the first two movies, and then we had to punish her for that by turning her into a slave and putting her in a gold bikini. And yes, that has been reclaimed now by turning her into Leia the Hutt Slayer, but that was not the intention of it.
We had to reclaim it. We, you know, it wasn't presented as look how awesome she is. It was look how hot she is. So, wow. This is going to be an interesting episode when we get to this roundtable. We have a lot of stuff that we're going to cover. Obviously, we've already covered a lot. But we're going to be talking about Rey. We're going to be talking about theories about who she might be. We're going to be talking about her backstory, some of the ancillary canon materials about her, like Before the Awakening. We're going to be talking about ships, I hope, because that's kind of one of my favorite subjects.
I'm going to have to be careful not to step on any landmines.
I am diving onto landmines. That's just... Hey, our philosophy is we are open to all ships and all theories, so damn it, we're going to talk about them all.
We'll need to figure out what the name of the Rey and Poe ship is, because this is my deep, dark secret.
I think that name is Jedi Pilot.
Jedi Pilot, of course, yeah, you are right.
Yep. So we'll be talking about Jedi Pilot, among other things. are we ready to start the news?
We are ready for the news.
All right.
This is MC, and this is what's happening in the galaxy. The New York Daily News reported that Disney has signed Alden Ehrenreich to a multi-picture deal as young Han Solo. The first movie will also serve as an origin story of Chewbacca. According to the insider who gave the scoop on the movies, there is a real sense of excitement around the Han Solo movie and its potential. Given that Han's early adventures do not need to be tied to the Empire, it leaves storylines open with the opportunity to really give fans something different. Despite the success of their trilogy of Star Wars parody episodes, Laugh It Up, Fozzball, Family Guy producer Alex Sulkin stated at San Diego Comic-Con they would not parody the prequel or sequel trilogies. According to him, Disney is much more rigid in what they will allow their characters to be portrayed doing, and creator Seth MacFarlane had a better relationship with Lucasfilm. RC toy maker Propel revealed 4 Star Wars drones at Celebration. The X-Wing, TIE Fighter, Speeder Bike, and Millennium Falcon will be priced between $200 and $300 and will be capable of aerial tricks and reaching up to 35 miles per hour. They are scheduled to be released in fall and winter. The Star Wars Twitter account posted a tweet from Rian Johnson, officially wrapping Episode 8 on July 22nd. A video was posted of the final, an oversized clapboard. The winner of San Diego Comic-Con's costume contest was animator Jeremy Fisher for a full bodysuit of the Rancor from Jabba's Palace. The suit, which cost approximately $2,000, was made of polyform and had detachable limbs. He spent over a year creating the suit. There were also winners, as the Fan Film Awards were held at Star Wars Celebration. 7 films were chosen as the best in their categories. The winners were TK-436, A Stormtrooper Story, The Sable Corsair, The Big Question, Force or Fate, Star Wars Generations, Ben in the Desert, Jawas Are Bad Neighbors, and Star Wars Malice Wars. Videos of all winners can be found in the link in the show notes. In Rogue One news, on the red carpet at Star Wars Celebration, Lucasfilm president Kathleen Kennedy debunked rumors that Hayden Christensen would be reprising his role as Anakin Skywalker / Darth Vader. While Darth Vader is appearing, the prequel actor will not be in the suit. She also denied that young Alden Ehrenreich's Han Solo would appear. Foodles Production, a Disney-owned production company which worked on The Force Awakens, pled guilty to 2 health and safety violations on July 26. 2 more charges were dropped. Due to inattention and safety, Harrison Ford broke his leg, and according to health and safety regulators, the force was comparable to the weight of a small car. Finally, on a somber note, Ken Hiller, who narrated the original Star Wars trilogy for NPR, passed away on July 13th in Gulf Breeze, Florida. He was 77 years old. He worked as a disc jockey, a studio engineer, and voiced commercials for General Mills, 3M, Montgomery Ward, and many others. He is survived by wife Marge, son Eric, daughter Kristen, and several grandchildren. On behalf of the Trash Compactor podcast, we say to Ken that the Force will be with you. Always. That's all for the Trash Compactor news. Links to more information on the stories we've reported on can be found in the show notes. If you have any tips, email us at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com. Listeners out there might be wondering why we didn't cover much news from Celebration. Well, the whole reason for that is because of this segment, and that is the Trash Compactor Podcast Reacts, where if there's big news in the Star Wars universe, we're going to comment on it here. And Star Wars Celebration happened 3 weeks ago, and there was lots revealed and lots of great moments during the convention, so we wanted to talk about it. Now, for those of you who don't know, Star Wars Celebration happens every year in different parts of the world, and it is the largest Star Wars gathering anywhere. I think they said this year there was like 4,000 people just in a single panel room for...
Yeah, they were saying that during the panels, that it was there were 4,000 people in the main room.
Yeah, I don't know if that's at the convention itself or if that's
Oh, no, there were
panel.
More than that because not everybody was in the main hall.
One of the great things is that Star Wars' YouTube channel, which we will provide a link to in the notes, puts up all of the panels and they put up highlights from like Q&As. So even if you're not at the convention, you can still enjoy it.
In fact, this year, the Star Wars live show, they were live streaming.
That is true. They were live streaming.
And I was actually glued to the live stream for a good chunk of all 3 days.
Yeah.
So I saw most of it.
I caught up on things later, but like Roan said, she watched much of the convention through live stream. I only caught up later on, and I had to pick and choose what I watched because I didn't have a lot of time. But let's talk about some of the things we did watch. What were the highlights in our opinion? And I know what Roan's going to say right away.
Okay, now listen. So Celebration was in the UK this year. So for the live stream, that meant that it was four hours, British summertime, right? That's 4 hours ahead of where I am. So the live stream was kicking off at 5 a.m. each morning. The very first day, Friday, the very first panel, why this was the very first panel, I don't know. But the very first panel at 6 freaking a.m. my time was Mark Hamill. So I got my ass out of bed and got a cup of coffee and sat down here and watched Mark Hamill at 6 in the morning. and it was worth every second of lost sleep. You really have to watch the video. All he did literally for an hour was take questions from the audience.
Mm-hmm. When you're watching it,
that's it.
You can really feel how much Mark Hamill cares about the fans. I've said this for a very long time. Mark Hamill is a celebrity I would really like to just have a drink with and talk about things with. We don't even have to talk about Star Wars. We don't have to talk about anything. I would just like to talk to him as another fan, because he is so passionate about fandom and just seems like a nice guy. And of course, one of the other highlights, Carrie Fisher, because Carrie Fisher is amazing.
So Carrie Fisher had her own panel as well, and it was it the next day? Yeah. It was on Saturday morning, also at 6 a.m. And I also got up to watch that as well. Carrie didn't do she didn't do a Q&A the way that Mark did. She actually had Warwick Davis there with her as her host. Mm.
I find her charming in how little fucks she gives.
She will say absolutely whatever comes into her mind. And it's delightful. I mean, that's the funny thing about Mark. You can tell that he's invested in his reputation as being a good guy, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. But you can see him censor himself every now and then.
Yeah.
Like, he'll start going down a path and be like, whoop, nope. There are kids in the audience. Or, whoop, nope, that, no, I'm not going to say that. Carrie does not have a filter.
I think Carrie has... Princess Leia is almost more iconic than Luke Skywalker. I mean, Luke Skywalker is an important character, but as the only female character, and with the very iconic look with the buns, and then with the slave bikini, which is even worse... She knows she can't live up to that icon anymore.
And being female, there's a different weight to it than there is for a guy.
Yeah. So I think she's just like, okay, whatever, this is who I am. And I think it's taken her a long time. She's dealt with a lot of depression and drug addiction. And I think she's just reached the point where it's like, this is who I am. The fans have to accept me that way, and so I'm not going to put on a show, and people just have to find me entertaining this way. And she is. She's very smart.
She's so witty.
Yeah. I
think my favorite point, though, in that whole panel was Warwick Davis was trying so hard to get her to recreate a scene from Return of the Jedi, and Carrie was just like, what the fuck ever? I don't care.
Oh, and for those of you who have enjoyed Gary Fisher...
Oh my god, I thought Gary was going to eat Warwick Davis.
Yeah, I think Warwick thought that too.
Gary is apparently very protective of Carrie, and so Gary was not having these shenanigans of Warwick Davis wearing an Ewok hat. He just wasn't for it. And in fact, ended up attacking the hat after Warwick Davis took it off. It was vastly entertaining.
No, of course... Everything wasn't just, having fun with, the celebrities. I mean, granted, that is a big part of things. There's also a lot of news that comes out at Celebration.
Holy crap. Yeah. So also on day one was the Rogue One panel.
Yes.
Which everyone was waiting for.
Yes. And the first thing that happened at the Rogue One panel, for all of you who are hashtag Where's Rey, the first thing that happens at the panel is that Felicity Jones gets her own Jyn Erso figure.
Yes! Given to her. Okay, the host of this panel, we have to say, was Gwendolyn Christie.
Yes.
Which, she was so perfect. She was so excited to be there. And she was the one who got to give Felicity Jones her action figure. And they were both clearly very excited.
Though Gwendolyn Christie says it's not as nice as her action figure.
Well, whatever.
Yeah, it's hard to compare to a 6-foot stormtrooper in chrome.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough to beat.
Yeah.
The next great thing that happened was the cast all came out. They talked to the director, and Gareth Edwards, I have the biggest crush on him now, because he's freaking adorable. He's like this little geek boy who's living the dream.
Oh, I think we need to talk about Ben Mendelsohn.
That's exactly what I was about to say. The next great moment was Ben Mendelsohn, who plays, what's his name? Damn it, the bad guy. We thought he was a grand admiral. He's not director. Anyway, so the director guy, the ISB guy, He comes in surrounded by death troopers in costume.
Full costume with that big flowing cape, and he doesn't say a word.
Coming up the aisle.
He just strides up and just stands there looking imperial-like.
And let me tell you, I didn't get the appeal. I didn't get why everyone was like going gaga over this guy until that moment. And then I went, oh, shit. I don't need to have feelings for another villain. This is bad.
Even if you're not having feelings for him, just the idea of him being such, he's going to be such an effective bad guy.
God, we're the worst fangirls ever.
No, I mean, it's, you know. There's a lot of names to remember.
The cast was absolutely delightful, although I think one of the cast members doesn't speak English very well.
Yeah.
And I swear to God, I thought Gwendolyn was going to tackle him because he was about ready to spoil things left.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So definitely watch for that and watch Gwendolyn Christie's face as she's going, no, shut up. Don't say anything else.
I think most of the stuff that they officially revealed was already stuff that had been leaked. I can't really think of any thing. But they did reveal the poster.
They did, and they also showed some footage, which everyone has probably seen by now. If not, again, show notes, it'll be there.
Yeah. But the poster, I want to have that poster. It's so
that
gorgeous.
That poster is fantastic. Yeah. I love the tagline. Yeah. So the tagline for Rogue One is a rebellion built on hope.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that.
Mm-hmm. Rogue One is, they just keep on building up the tension for it. Like, When The Force Awakens was coming out, we've talked about before that none of us were really paying attention to what was going on. I mean, we kind of knew in the back of our minds that a Star Wars movie was happening, but it's like, oh, well, you know, the prequels happen, so, you know, we'll see what's going to happen with this. But now that The Force Awakens come out and it's been such a huge, you know, hit, what's on Rogue One? Rogue One has all big shoes to fill, and they're just not disappointing with their press for it.
I am riveted. To this.
I want to see this so bad. Like, it looks, I can see where it's a Star Wars movie, but it's not a Star Wars movie in the same way. It's like, I kind of equate it to the Battle of Hoth, just extended for an entire movie, just based on what we've seen so far. Because it looks like gritty action, people fighting each other, instead of, you know, this fun space opera. It looks like an amazing war movie.
It really does. Oh, they did show an actual trailer at mm-hmm. Celebration. But it was blocked from the live stream, and it's not included anywhere as of right now that I know of.
There are some videos on YouTube, which, you know, maybe
I haven't found a Google
include
yet.
It in the show notes. That they have not, they don't have scenes from it, but they do describe what was said, what happened. So
see, I've seen someone actually had their cell phone camera and naughty person.
Oh, don't do that.
It was a really terrible recording, and you really saw only like half the screen, so I really didn't see the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So, that was so exciting. Yeah. The cast, I'm so excited about this cast. Oh, my God.
They seem so great.
I am already completely in love with Diego Luna. It's going to be a problem.
They're a charming cast. I mean, The Force Awakens has a very charming cast, and they carried that through to the movie. And we're seeing that already with the Rogue One cast. And I love the diversity in the cast.
Yeah. You know, we could do with a woman of color.
Yeah, I mean,
that
would
be nice. But, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the one weak point that we do have, you know, the white brunette again. They're at least, you know, branching out a little more than they have in the past.
Right.
So I think probably the biggest news that came out of Star Wars Celebration was actually on the Rebels panel.
I know, which is really funny because I think that was kind of out of the blue. I mean, I'm a huge Rebels fan. I love the show. The finale for season 2 killed me. in all the best ways. So I was really excited to get a sneak peek at season three. You know, I was expecting, you know, there'd been a few clips, so I was thinking maybe a trailer, you know, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
But holy shit.
Yeah, I mean, having news about the show itself, I mean, that's awesome. And certainly, I mean, everything was related to their show. But there were things announced that will be, you know, universe-changing for Star Wars. Certainly, the biggest reaction I think I saw at the whole convention happened on that panel.
And I mean, we may as well spit it out for people who haven't already heard it.
Okay.
Series 3 is bringing back a villain from the old EU.
Yeah. The character, for those of you who don't know, and I think it's actually very few people, because even if you did not read the books, you heard about this character. It's,
yeah, I've never read the books, and I know who he is. Yeah. So.
The character is Grand Admiral Thrawn, who is the main antagonist in the Thrawn trilogy, and that book series is what started the whole expanded universe. So this is a major character that people have been begging for in the new Star Wars canon. They're remaining very true to the character. And not only that, they had a brief video from Timothy Zahn, who created the character. And he apologized for not being able to be at Celebration because he is hard at work on a book called Thrawn, which will be, they will introduce the character into Rebels in season three. And then I think in spring of 2017, this book on Thrawn will come out, which will focus entirely on him at presumably when he's with the Empire, and they will establish his new backstory. And, you know, that's huge.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like I said, I've never read the EU, but I was watching the trailer, which we will, of course, link to, because you have to watch it. It's fantastic for so many reasons. And obviously, it was like, you know, they're introducing a new villain. And as soon as they showed the villain's skin color, I knew who he was.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about this guy, but I knew that, and the audience lost their shit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, bonkers. People were screaming. It was fantastic.
Now, for EU fans out there, don't get your hopes up. Like, I think the first or second question that came from the audience was...
First.
It was the first.
The very next question was, what about Mara Jade?
Yeah. Somebody asked about Mara Jade, and they said they are not bringing her into the show. Now, that's just to say they're not bringing her into the show. I'm not saying that Mara Jade is completely out of the question. I mean, maybe Rebels can't use her because they're saving her for the movies, but don't get your hopes up.
Yeah, Dave Filoni sounded pretty... I mean, when they said, what about Mara Jade, he was pretty much like, no.
Yeah.
And he didn't... He wasn't that decisive about anything on that panel. because for those of you who watch Rebels and who watch Clone Wars, you know that season two ended on a very uncertain note for Ahsoka Tano.
We have definite confirmation that Ahsoka may or may not be dead.
Yeah, exactly. Filoni did go so far as to say that he doesn't think we've seen the end of her, but he didn't say in what form, if it's going to be a flashback, if she's going to actually come back. And there is a standalone book coming out, speaking of standalone books, all about Ahsoka, which I personally am super excited about.
I'm so looking forward to all of the books they're coming out with. I mean, they've just been such quality so far.
But the panel itself, I mean, aside from Thrawn, which obviously kind of sucked the air out of the room, there's a lot of really interesting stuff coming up with Star Wars Rebels. They're definitely going to be dealing with with Kanan's blindness and how he's going to be adjusting to that. They drew a lot of parallels to the samurai movies of having the blind samurai and how he's going to learn to work with the Force despite having lost his eyesight. Ezra, obviously, went through some huge changes at the end of the series. You know, there's this question of just how dark has he gone at this point. He does have a Sith holocron, and from the looks of the trailer, he is spending some time with it. So this is all very bad. Plus, I don't know how big the time jump is, but he's older. Mm-hmm. He looks about a year or so older at least.
Oh, there is one thing that was mentioned that was in the trailer that nobody really picked up on. Wedge was mentioned in it.
Yeah, oh my god! Yes! Holy shit! That was like the first thing I got excited about. Wedge is showing up in season 3.
Yeah, I was trying to understand like the whole context of things, but were they suggesting that Wedge was like an Imperial officer?
No. Okay. He was a student.
Oh, okay.
At an academy, I think.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like that they're going to rescue and or acquire several students from the Imperial Academy, and one of them is in fact Wedge Antilles. I'm so excited. And there's also the fact that we're going to see the Darksaber again, which showed up in Clone Wars, which obviously is a Mandalorian thing, mm-hmm. and Sabine winds up with it somehow. So I'm really curious to see how that's going to play out.
Yeah, no, I have to admit, I have not actually seen Rebels yet. I'm still trying to work my way through Clone Wars, but
I know, that's why I'm the one being all excited
about
this.
seeing that preview, I was like, oh crap, now I want to just like go and, you know, marathon the first two seasons so that I can be
caught
up.
You'll be fine.
Because, I mean, it's like, well, I was originally going to try and finish Clone Wars first, but it's like, well, you know what? I kind of know what happens in Clone Wars, so maybe I could like just skip to Rebels. And I mean,
it's not that
I don't want to watch Clone Wars. Believe me, all you Clone Wars fans. It's just, I really want to see Rebels.
Rebels is so good. Oh my god. I love Kanan Jarrus so much, I can't even tell you. Like, what a shock. Rowan's in love with a Jedi. Surprise! But he's so awesome. And Hera, oh my god, these characters. I love these characters so much. Obviously, we're going to have a Star Wars Rebels episode at some point. Probably when the new season starts to air. That's our plan.
Yeah, we'll probably let a couple of episodes at least go through before so that we actually have something proper to react to.
Yes, well, you know, and Wedge coming in is great because last season we saw Princess Leia mm-hmm. as a 15-year-old. So that was awesome, and I'm, like, waiting as patiently as I can for the crew of the Ghost to go to Tatooine, because they have to at this point. Because, I mean, at this point, Lando's shown up, Leia's shown up, Wedge is showing up. They have to. They have to run into Han, and they have to run into Luke. I'm sorry, I don't make the rules. So, yeah, so I obviously... I think second to the Mark Hamill panel, I was most excited about the Rebels.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Rebels, and the Rebels panel is the one that excited me the most. And I mean, part of that is because I am an EU fan, but I've also said before, I'm not a huge fan of the Timothy Zahn books, but I understand what a huge thing this is. And Grand Admiral Thrawn is pretty badass. So bringing him in, that's cool. I mean, I'm looking forward to really seeing him at the peak of the Empire.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and this is... The period that Rebels is set in really is kind of peak Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah,
every time we saw Grand Admiral Thrawn in the EU, and I'm sorry if maybe there was a book later on that had set things earlier, but most of the time when we saw him, it was after the Empire had fallen. So, I mean, you don't see him like actually with like this huge Imperial group behind him. And I want to see that. I want to see, and it's just a really massive thing to bring in this character, and it does open up a lot of possibilities. And, you know, Mar Jade isn't the only possibility. There's a lot more stuff at that can happen.
There was so much stuff. I mean, we've just barely scratched the surface talking about, I mean, there were other panels that were great. I've heard the Future Filmmaker panel was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. Just little snippets because they brought Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher and John Boyega and Alden Ehrenreich. Is that how you pronounce
Alden
it?
Alden Ehrenreich, yeah.
And they were all on stage talking about movies that are coming up. So that was exciting. There were the Star Wars live show had little interviews in between the big panels that were a lot of fun. My personal favorite was they did an interview with Garrick Hagen, who played Biggs Darklighter, who is, I mean, the fans, we love him to bits.
Yeah.
And so they had an interview with him, and there's this really great moment from Mark Hamill's Twitter where the two of them got to reconnect and got to talk, and it was adorable. Apparently his grandson is named Luke, which is so cute. I can't stand it.
Oh my god, that's adorable. I think so just all in all, the thing that we gotta say is go to the Star Wars YouTube and go check out some of the panels and the videos that they have up there. Yeah, it's a really good way to spend just a couple of, you know, an hour or two. Just, you know, geeking out on Star Wars. And, you know, maybe next year you'll decide you'll want to go. Maybe we'll decide we want to go. Maybe we'll be like, whoa, too many people.
I'm kind of feeling like, whoa, too many people. I'll sit behind my computer and watch it.
Yeah.
It's the closest I'm ever going to get to Mark Hamill anyway, so.
So, yeah, that is the, you know, first time we've done Trash Compactor Reacts, and hopefully we'll be doing this more in the future for bigger and bigger news that comes out that we want to report on, but for now...
I'm already expecting we are definitely going to do one for Rogue One after we've both seen it.
Oh, definitely.
So.
You mean, like, the night after Rogue One comes out?
Come home from the theater and record right away, and it's just going to be 15 minutes of MC and
so, oh, my God!
Oh, my God!
But yeah, so I think that's it. So let's get into the spotlight. A legendary warrior and an adept pilot, Jaina Solo was a worthy successor to her parents. In the midst of Thrawn's final campaign, Jaina was born on Coruscant along with her twin brother Jason, the eldest children of Han Solo and Leia Organa Solo. Their uncle, Luke Skywalker, feared the Force-gifted children would be swayed to the dark side, and they were hidden on the planet New Alderaan with Leia's most trusted aide, Winter. For 2.5 years, the twins were hidden, later joined by their brother Anakin. Jaina had a strong Force bond with her twin, often communicating with him telepathically. Jaina and her brothers would dodge kidnapped and corruption attempts for their entire childhood. At 13, she and Jason began attending Luke's Jedi Academy. She would take on the Shadow Academy and the Second Imperium along with friends Lobaka, Tenelka, and Zek. Jaina's aptitude for mechanics and flying, inherited from her father, started to become prevalent, and she created her own lightsaber crystal. During the Yuuzhan Vong War, Jaina proved herself an admirable warrior. She joined Rogue Squadron, earning the nickname Styx because of her lightsaber and the control stick in her X-Wing. She suffered the loss of her adoptive Wookiee uncle Chewbacca, but also met Jagged Fell, who would eventually become her husband. As the war dragged on, Jaina was injured, captured, torn apart from her twin, and even lost her younger brother Anakin, an event that nearly tore her family apart. Still, she fought on. By the close of the war, Jaina was a lieutenant colonel and a full Jedi Knight with the title Sword of the Jedi. The title spoke of how she would always be on the front lines, purposeful and determined to protect others. Peace did not last long in the galaxy, and Jaina became embroiled first in the Swarm War, and then in the Second Galactic Civil War. The second conflict became a personal war, as Jaina's parents took the side of the Corellian independence movement, while Jaina, Jason, and Luke remained loyal to the Galactic Alliance. Jaina's relationship with her twin strained, as she began to feel a darkness inside of him. She felt the death of her aunt, Mara Jade Skywalker, through the Force, but was unaware it was Jason, secretly the Sith Lord Dark Kydus, who had murdered her. When she discovered the truth, she no longer recognized him as family, and became obsessed with training as a Jedi warrior. She even trained under Boba Fett, the bounty hunter who had stalked her father years before her birth. She eventually found Kydus, and fought him, both injuring each other greatly. Jaina eventually got the upper hand, and Kydus gave up, instead focusing his power on warning his lover Tenelka about the danger facing her and their daughter. Jaina still delivered a killing blow to the Sith Lord, but when he died, she instead felt the death of her own brother. Jaina was found by their parents, cradling Jason's dead body. In the wake of Kydus's campaign against the galaxy, public opinion turned against the Jedi. Despite this, Jaina served as Jedi liaison to the Galactic Alliance. She joined with her uncle, cousin, and other Jedi in order to defeat the ancient dark side entity Aboloth. After destroying the creature, Jaina's contentious courtship with Jagged Fell finally led to marriage. 100 years later, that coupling led to a dynasty of powerful Force users. Welcome to our main segment this episode. We're going to be talking about our newest heroine, Rey. We will discuss our reactions to her, shipping, theories about her past, and what we think will happen in her future. I'm MC, and with me is...
This is Roan.
This is Rex.
This is April.
So we have a special guest again this month. Yay!
I'm Rex Luskus on Tumblr. I write fanfic. I'm just a sort of general character around fandom, I guess you could say. Been into Star Wars since I was a kid, and that's all you need to know.
Well, we're glad to have you on the show.
Thanks.
Well, to start out the show, let's talk about Rey even before the movie came out. What did you think when you first heard about Rey? Did you think she was going to be the lead? What preconceived notions did you have when you went into things?
Well, I know we've talked about this a little bit before. I had zero preconceived notions about anybody in this movie. I mean, nothing. I didn't even know who the villain was. Like, I didn't know his name. Obviously, I didn't know who he was until I saw the movie, but I didn't know what his name was. I didn't know anything about him until the trailer came out. So up until I saw the trailer, I barely realized that there was a woman starring in it. And then when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, she seems really cool and kind of Luke-ish. Because it's like desert planet. Okay.
Though with the ad campaign, they were really leaning heavily on Finn. And I mean, yes, he's a very important character in the movie, but I would say certainly he is not as prominent as Rey is in the final piece. And they were kind of playing with a, oh, he's going to be a red herring and that we will have him in all of the previews showing him with a lightsaber. And then it's actually Rey. Right.
You know, he actually has more screen time than Rey, though.
Really?
I believe that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm convinced that his red herringness is itself going to turn out to be a red herring.
Ooh, say more about that.
Oh, just that there was this, you know, marketing fake out where Rey ultimately seemed to be the more important character, even though Finn was promoted heavily at the beginning. But I actually think they're going to use that to set up expectations that they're then going to, Finn's going to have more to do that is going to be surprising, given that Rey seems to be the one who is force sensitive. That's, yeah. I don't know what it's going to be, but, you know.
Force sensitive Finn?
Yeah. Force-sensitive Finn is what it comes down to.
Also, if you think about, like, if you, you know, comparing his, any of his arc to Luke, you know, Luke really, he was the hero without a lot of conflict in, you know, without a lot of internal conflict in A New Hope. He had a lot of external conflict. And then all his internal conflict starts in Empire Strikes Back. So we can, I think, definitely kind of see that happening with Finn, especially with what John Boyega has talked about in regards to 8 and how it's different and darker. And he says everybody's being pulled in different directions. And yeah, I don't know if he and Rey, like there are people who theorize that he and Rey will have completely separate arcs in this movie. I kind of hope not because I love their chemistry so much, but it will be interesting to see if they keep the whole, how they keep the co-lead thing going if they have two separate paths in this movie. I mean, I definitely think they're going to come together again. Rey basically promised it. But
The Star Wars movies do have a reputation for splitting people up in the second movie. I mean, if you look at The Empire Strikes Back, you have the whole Dagobah plot, and then you have the Millennium Falcon plot that eventually goes to Cloud City. And even in Attack of the Clones, you have Anakin and Padme off, you know, with their grand love affair while Obi-Wan is exploring the whole clone things, and they only come together at the end. So, I mean, if they do want to keep up that pattern, which just based on the first movie, they might. So it's possible that they might have very separate arcs that only come together at the very end.
When they kick Snoke's ass, maybe. I don't know. Together.
No, that's not till the third one.
Yeah, sadly. Yeah, I was kind of like with Roan, had really few preconceived notions about the movie because I'd stayed so much away from learning anything about it. So, you know, I was just as surprised as anyone to find, you know, Rey's force sensitive, that she was a co-lead. And I was pleased that she wasn't sidelined. I mean, and she was very prominent on the posters and everything. So she, Finn, and Kylo Ren sort of share the bulk of the like space on the posters. But yeah, I just had no idea that she was going to be so prominent in it. And so that was cool to find out. And to find out just how lovely and wonderful and likable she was just amazing.
Well, I guess my preconceived notions of her really ties into one of our later questions, so maybe I should bring it up then. But it mostly has to do with Rey's history. So, I had very preconceived notions as to who she was when she was first announced. So, I was very surprised when I actually got to the movie. But yeah, I mean, like,
I think everybody was.
Yeah. The ad campaign, I think, really did a good job of showing everything as an ensemble piece, which I think this is even more than the other movies.
Well, I'm another person who kind of, you know, embargoed my my exposure to any kind of marketing, or I didn't read anything. I didn't know what, I just saw the trailer and I was like, okay, so there's a guy and a girl and they both seem to be, they're like young. So clearly they're, that's all I knew. And I was like, how are they going to be? So I had no expectations.
That actually sounds like the original ad campaign for A New Hope. It was a guy, a girl, and a universe, or a galaxy.
That was exactly it.
Okay, so moving on to the movie itself. What was your favorite moment with Rey? And I think a lot of people really loved that moment in the snow. So I'm just going to say, let's leave that one off the table. Let's talk about the other moments with Rey. I mean, that might...
That wasn't... Oh. I was going to say, that one wasn't
mine.
Oh,
really?
Because we were saying beforehand at first that we thought it was going to be the moment that she called the lightsaber. Mm-hmm. And that was certainly a moment, and that was, like, the moment that we all screamed. Mm-hmm. And I have to laugh. I don't know how many people... And we'll be talking about, or have already talked about, Star Wars Celebration at some point in this podcast. But what cracks me up is apparently Mark Hamill read the script and thought that that was his entrance.
Like he was just going to appear.
He thought he was the one. He was the one who was calling the lightsaber.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he did. He was like, I was reading it, I'm like, oh, that's a fantastic entrance. That's great.
See, I've just given away that I haven't
Ray caught it?
Mark Hamill's thing yet.
I'll forgive you this time. So anyway, so yeah, so I love that moment, but that wasn't my moment. My moment that I was like ready to climb up on my chair and start standing on it in the theater was actually the moment when they're on the ledge and Dumbo Kylo Ren reminds her of the Force. And she's like, oh, right, the Force. Oops, I forgot. And like,
what's this Force you're talking of? Oh, right, that.
Oh, right, that thing. And she closes her eyes, and you just know what's going to happen. You mm-hmm. just know. You know as soon as she opens her eyes, she's going to start kicking his ass. That was my moment. That was my stand up on the chair and yell moment.
It's a good moment.
Like, okay, so I guess as far as in the theater, I don't remember, like, my reaction, like, as far as anything, like, in particular that was just like, oh, my God, when I first saw it. So, but, like, having seen it so many times now... I would say with Rey, I love the moment when she decides she's not going to sell BB-8 because I think it's such, it indicates so much about her moral compass, like the fact that she thought about it first and then they did cut because originally, and I think from what I noticed from the behind the scenes, they did actually film the part that's in the novelization as well where she shuts him down for a moment.
And she's like bartering?
And she barters. She gives him a higher offer of 100 portions. But then... Yeah, I think it says so much about her moral compass that she decides not to do it. Also, her loneliness probably had a lot to do with that as well. But because if you think about it, if she's surviving on, you know, a quarter or half portion a day, how long 60 portions could feed her
is
kind of intense. So, yeah, I really, really love that. And I also loved her little angry face when she first shoots a stormtrooper on in the woods. Because I always tell people, like, it's like, no, she's not a little ray of sunshine. She liked killing those stormtroopers. Like, she was mad, but she was, like, righteously mad. Mm-hmm. And she does attempt to shoot first as well. So, yeah, I think as far as just sort of, like, subtle character defining things, those two things, definitely.
So my favorite Rey moment, I don't know if it's a Rey moment so much as just a moment that has Rey in it.
Fair enough.
It's kind of my favorite moment in the whole film, which is the very first, like, montage scene mm-hmm. with her, where it's just her puttering around her house, mm-hmm. and she, like, makes the weird instant muffin, and she, like, puts the helmet on it, like, all that mm-hmm. stuff. Like, the muffin, the muffin gets me every time. Don't take that out of context. Mm-hmm. There's something so Star Wars-y about that. Right, yeah, exactly. I felt like it could go that direction. But anyway, I love her instant muffin. Mm-hmm. It's just my favorite thing in the whole movie. And just, like, there's something about, like, the way she puts that helmet mm-hmm. on. It's like you suddenly have this really good sense of who she is mm-hmm. and just, like, the way she's moving around. And I don't know, there's just, like, she establishes who she is in, like, this really short period of time. It's just just like her interacting with the stuff in her house.
Weirdly enough,
that's a huge character moment.
That was my moment too. Actually, her putting on the helmet.
Yeah.
That moment was her, I was going to Tosh Station to pick up power converters.
Yeah, totally.
It establishes exactly who she is. It, you know, she is a sweet girl. She's playful. She's lonely. I mean, you see her with, like, the X-Wing pilot doll in her house. But, yeah, and I mean, like, just the desolateness of this wall of, you know, all of these marks that nobody has come to pick her up for that long. Oh, mm-hmm. I mean, that whole moment. But then she's still able to find happiness just by putting on this helmet that she most likely took off of a corpse. Okay, so I think a huge issue when it comes to Rey. And actually, I was talking about... I have a BB-8 purse, which I got from my lovely friend, Petra Todd, who I love you. And so I get into conversations with cashiers all the time because I pick up my purse to take out money and they're like, oh my God, you like Star Wars? And I got into a conversation at the office supply store about Rey. And he's like, who do you think Rey's parents are? And so I'm standing in the office supply store talking about, you know, who's Rey's parents are. And he was giving me theories. So this is something that...
And you were like, why, yes, I've never heard any of those before. That's fascinating.
Well, no, I actually told him that I had a podcast and, you know... Then that night...
Hello, if you're listening.
So, I mean, the topic of Rey's parentage goes absolutely beyond fandom and it goes into the everyday world. People are wondering about this. This has been one of the big questions that has come out from the movie. So there are many theories that are out there right now. And who do we think Rey springs from?
She's like Athena. She sprang from Luke Skywalker's head. Really, Brian.
I've basically gotten to the point where, like, everybody pretty much will come over. I mean, I was, after reading Aftermath, I was like, Snap Wexley's old enough to be your dad, and he's a genius with tech, and he's a good pilot, he's totes her dad. Like, I was like, Brendel Hawks disappeared on Jakku, totes her dad. Like, I don't know.
You know, well, I wouldn't put it past them to like, the story group to have told all the people who were creating the sort of paracanonical stuff to be like, if you can drop a hint that somebody is Rey's dad, do it. Cover the field. Like, let's just make it impossible to tell. Just a smoke screen of, like, anybody could be Rey's dad. I'll bet they did that.
Of course, fandom doesn't even need their help, because some of the theories that I have seen, people that were dead for many years before Rey was born have been suggested.
Like Moff Tarkin?
No. Actually, like, this was one of the theories that was mentioned to me by the kid from the office supply store. I've heard Rey Palpatine suggested.
See, I've heard that, though, too. I've heard that, like, as a granddaughter or great-granddaughter, but, like, in that lineage. I mean, okay, let's talk
which
about the elephant
me,
in the room.
Which did make me... Yeah, which did make me, though, kind of the Palpatine thing made me, because in Life Dead, I think there's a mention of Palpatine left no family members that we know of. Mm. So,
dun, dun,
you know,
they're
trolling the crap out of us, like, really.
No, well, I mean, anyway. Okay, obviously let's get the elephant out in the room, out in the open, and talk about it. I walked out of the theater absolutely 100% convinced that she was Luke Skywalker's kid. I mean, I wrote fic about it. I was dead certain she was his kid.
I think everybody did.
I did
and,
not.
And
I didn't.
Well, from... Okay, first of all, we all know that if it involves Luke, I'm, like, there for it. But I think, for me, there is a certain storytelling balance to it that appeals to me, where, like, we have the children of Leia and Luke having to face off against each other. Mm-hmm. That's, like... That like tickles my brain and makes me very happy as a storyteller. And there's just a symmetry to it. And, you know, obviously the fact that the lightsaber called to her and the lightsaber, you know, it's like, this is yours. This is your legacy. That also really, really appeals to me. And I mean, finally, just the look on Luke's face at the end, there's so many ways to read it, but that's, like, the most heart-wrenching for me.
See, and for me, though, because the only way that it works for me is for him to not know that she existed.
Mm-hmm. Well,
because
okay,
otherwise
here's...
Because otherwise, it's like...
Why would he have done that? I know.
You know, okay, there's not the stakes, as far as the stakes, you know.
Listen.
What?
I'm sorry. Listen, I have thought my way around this one, because I really wanted this to be true. My personal theory is, if it turns out that that's the case, and I'm kind of thinking it's probably not at this point, because they're not going to give us obvious, but if this is the case, what I see happening is he had a relationship with somebody who left before she told him she was pregnant. Mm-hmm. So he didn't know he had a kid, because my God, of all the people, he would not have left her anywhere.
Exactly.
He would have torn the universe apart to find her. Which raises the question, then, why didn't he sense her through the Force? I don't know. I'm not in the story group.
Well, Vader didn't sense Luke and Leia.
This is true. He didn't.
You know.
And also, Luke had his frickin' name, so.
Yeah, seriously. Not very bright. But then when she shows up in front of him, I think that could explain, like, the look on his face of, oh, shit.
I think he also might have just been, you know, surprised that there was somebody on his planet holding his lightsaber that he hasn't seen since somebody cut his hand off. And I've also seen some.
If you're gonna
was
be
it Mark Hamill who said, you know, have you seen the hand that came with it?
Yes.
He actually tweeted that. God bless him.
Well, and then that brings us to, like, there's the theory of, you know, she's actually a clone made from Luke's severed hand.
I haven't heard that one.
I'm pretty sure that clones don't gender swap. I mean, I think...
Okay.
Yeah, that's just one that popped up one time when I was discussing theories. So I'm not saying that I don't think it holds water at all, but it's just one that's out there.
This is so bizarre because I have talked last episode about how part of my problem with the Rey Skywalker theory is that I basically wrote it in a Mary Sue fic. But...
I thought you said you wrote the Rey Kenobi theory.
It was Rey Kenobi. It was a Kenobi had a kid with Luke, and then there was a Skywalker.
Oh, right. Okay.
But I also wrote a story, which was a Doctor Who story about a female clone cloned from his severed hand. So it was that. But, okay, wow. Just I mentioned before that I had preconceived notions when I went into this movie, and my preconceived notion was that she was a Solo. I was absolutely convinced that she was Leia and Han's kid. I thought, it's like, okay, this is the movie's version of Jaina Solo. And I think they kind of trolled towards that, because, I mean, I didn't pay much attention to what was going on before the movie came out, but I paid a little. And I saw Daisy Ridley made a comment about how her character is on a Solo path or something like that. And everybody was like, ooh, yeah, thanks. And I actually thought that Rey was Leia and Han's kid and that Kylo Ren might be Luke's. But after the movie came out, it never really, the idea of, I tried to do some mental gymnastics for how she could still be a Solo. But then in the end, it was like, no, okay, she's not. But I never really kind of connected with the whole Rey Skywalker thing because everybody was telling me, oh, well, this is, you know, how it is. She's a Skywalker. She's a Skywalker. And I'm like, fuck you. I'm going to do what I want.
That's the thing with me. As long as people are just like, before it's confirmed, the fact that people are so confident about it, and I don't care why they tell me they're so confident about it. I'm like, you don't know for sure. So yeah. I'm just going to reject it completely.
Yeah.
I don't like being told that, you know, for some that nobody knows, there's like a handful of people that know in this universe, and, you know, these fans are not them. Yeah, so I'm just like, whatever, dude, I'm going to have fun for the next year and a half, and whatever happens, happens, if we even find out anything.
I think the only way I will accept Rey Skywalker is if she is also Rey and Tilly's, because I love Luke and Wedge, and Rey Antilles is actually kind of my favorite theory for Rey, because we have the ultimate extra who is just in like a few small scenes in like the first three movies, and I would just love for his offspring to be the hero. And I mean, when
he's such a badass in Aftermath. So,
well, I was going to say, you need to read both Aftermath books because he is no longer an extra. He is awesome.
Well, I mean, also, I'm coming from the EU where he was a super badass in those. So, I mean, I love Wedge. And I just really love the idea of just, you know, and I mean, I don't know how, you know, Rey would have ended up on Jakku, but at that point, it doesn't really matter. And that shocked look could have been like, oh my God, this is, you know, my friend's kid or whatever. But
yeah. Well, and also we don't know how good is Luke at far-seeing, you know, like Luke could have sensed all of this sort of happening and coming as well.
Mm-hmm.
But also, oh God. Yeah. I was thinking earlier about this too. It's like, I've come to the point where I don't even care so much who her parents are. I want to know what happened to them. Like, whatever it is, what happened, and was she, you know, and people kind of assume she was left there, which I think might be an accurate thing, but also, what if she was born there and left there, you know? Yeah,
that's true.
I don't know. It's just sort of like,
That doesn't seem to come up very much when people talk about it. Everybody assumes that she came from somewhere else and was then sort of abandoned there, but
Yeah, and so many little things are happening on Jakku in the extended canon that you're like, the planet itself is important. It's not just backwater.
Yeah. Water, you know, for a backwater outer rim planet, there is a lot of shit happening on this planet.
Well, I mean, Tatooine was the same fucking way. I mean, just look at all the shit that happened on Tatooine. So there's still a huge Rey parental theory that we have barely, like, scratch the surface on. Rey Kenobi. Speak of Rey Kenobi. Yeah.
I'm a fan of Rey Kenobi, personally. And I'll tell you why. it has nothing to do with who she is, like, her character, because I think, like, when you're talking about who her parents are, you're not talking about the character itself, you're talking about, like, the sort of position she occupies in the kind of story symbolic network. So it's less about like her specifically and more about like how she's gonna sort of fit into the plot. And somebody told me this on Tumblr. I can't for the life of me remember where I read this theory, but somebody was like, you know, if she is somehow the grandchild of Obi-Wan Kenobi and Kylo is the grandchild of Anakin Skywalker, They have the potential to sort of play Anakin's and Obi-Wan's relationship in reverse.
Ooh.
I like that a lot.
So they start out as the mortal enemies that Anakin and Obi-Wan ended up as, and as they somehow come to a reconciliation, if they do, that would in some sense like heal the wound of the rift between Anakin and Obi-Wan in some symbolic way.
Yeah, that's why I love that theory.
Yeah, I don't even know if it like makes sense. I just want that to be true. I want that to happen. So that's why I support that theory.
I think along those lines, that's another way that the Palpatine theory works, that, you know, you have a Palpatine and a Skywalker going face to face again, only they're flipped.
Mm-hmm. With the Rey Kenobi, like the one thing that bothers me about it is that it would take a lot of time to actually like explain all of the backstory for it. But then on the other hand, I'm thinking about it, they really never gave a whole lot of backstory when it came to Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker. I mean, it was just you just accepted it. And I mean,
they did a whole trilogy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, eventually they did a whole trilogy, but in the original trilogy, it was just like boom. Luke, I am your father. And then you get like a couple of lines from Obi-Wan where it was just, you know, like, yeah, I lied and, you know, he actually is your dad. And,
oh, by the way, you have a sister.
Yeah. And you didn't like get to that until, you know, it was time we're going to do the whole prequel story. So, I mean, they probably could get away with it. And I guess there's ancillary canons, you know, such as Rebels, that could possibly explain things that, you know, get a little bit into maybe not explaining the whole backstory, but maybe explaining Obi-Wan having a kid or something.
Well, I mean, Rebels, it would be a good thing for, like, you know, they drop the name in one of the movies and are like, it's so-and-so. And we go, wait, who's that? We've never heard of that person. And then, you know, boom, they show up the next season in Rebels, like 20 years younger and, you know, or whatever.
I think as a writer, it's an interesting position because, like, you know, you want to make it something that's recognizable or that resonates with the general audience as a whole, but then maybe you don't want to be obvious and be like, she is Luke's child, like everybody thought, you know? So it's mm-hmm. like finding, I think that the Kenobi theory works in finding that balance as well.
Yeah.
And that
yeah, totally.
It's something you can drop in the movies. People know who he was. And then maybe there's other information elsewhere as to like, oh, when did he hook up? I mean, he was, you know, people are talk about him being a hermit or whatever. And I'm like, hermits get lonely. Hermits go out and meet people.
Yeah, there's like, no reason he can't have a kid. Like,
right.
Like,
there's zero reason.
And you don't even need to explain it, really.
No. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know. Like, yeah. So, yeah, I like that. I also like somebody mentioned, too, that as far as like why they personally were against Rey Skywalker being so much that it then her battle with Kylo becomes smaller and more about legacy mm-hmm. than about, you know, actually either bringing balance to the Force, whatever that means. We don't even know what that really
which
means.
Supposedly Anakin already did. I don't know.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And that just made me think of my whole idea of, you know, they were totally wrong about Anakin being the chosen one to begin with, and maybe it is Rey or Kylo even as a chosen one, because balance doesn't mean what you think it means, because prophecies are always tricky fuckers. Mm. You know?
One thing that I think will come into play with the question of Rey's parentage is that the first movie is such an maybe homage is the wrong word. There's so many beats that are similar to A New Hope. And mm-hmm. they might not do that perfectly for the next movie, but there has to be some beats that are similar to The Empire Strikes Back. And I think they're gonna have to have that I am your father moment. And by that I am your father moment, I don't mean that that literally has to happen. I mean, we have to have a shocking event. And it has to happen.
I think that it has to do with what happened with Kylo's turn.
Really?
Because, like, I think that the actual mystery box in this movie is not Rey's parentage. Yeah. It is what the hell happened at, you know, with Luke and Kylo and all of this other stuff. Because we don't know. It's based on, all of the fanon is based on assumptions off of some very vague and purposely vague, like, lines from the movie. We don't know what happened. And I think that that's really going to be the shock. Everybody assumes that he, you know, killed a bunch of kids, which didn't happen. And, you know, turned in and just, that it was this immediate sort of like really sinister thing. And, you know, we may come to find out it was a huge misunderstanding and some crazy shit happened that nobody expects to find out. Yeah. So yeah, that's my thing. So as far as shocking reveals, I think it's everything you thought about what happened to Kylo Ren was wrong.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Well, I'm thinking there has to be something that makes Rey question Luke. Because, I mean, obviously, like, the whole I am your father thing, that made Luke question Obi-Wan and question Yoda. So I think that whatever is revealed, whether it be something to do with Rey's parentage, or whether it has to do with Kylo Ren, it's going to be something that is absolutely earth-shattering to Rey.
People have theorized that it's she will find out that she actually harmed her parents in some way.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That's really creepy. Yeah.
That's kind of dark for Star Wars. I don't know about that.
I know. But it's out there.
Mm-hmm. This is why I originally thought that it was going to be Rey Solo, because I was like, oh, it would be such a perfect imitation of the Luke, I'm your father beat if it turned out that Kylo was her brother. Because, mm-hmm. like, the first movie sets up how much she hates him, and then, you know, the second movie tells her that the person she hates is actually like her brother, very close to her. Like that, yeah. that seemed like yeah. a good because aping of the original.
That was
story.
Actually
yeah, that has much more impact than being cousins yeah. because yeah. you know unless right. you're raised with your cousins, it's not necessarily a close relationship.
Right, like Ray, I'm your cousin.
Yeah. yeah, no. Part it's of like okay.
Part of my mental gymnastics so when I was trying to get the whole Ray Solo thing to work and trying to come up with this whole Ray's betrayal. By Luke, I was thinking that it would actually be revealed that Luke had, like, wiped everyone's memories of Rey, just to keep her safe. But, you know, that is, like, a complete bullshit theory, and Bloodline just proved that's even more bullshit than I thought it was. But that was, like, the whole thing that I was coming up with, so...
Oh, Bloodline, it smashed so much fanon.
Yeah. Oh my god, it did.
it actually... Well... I love that it did because it just forces us to be more creative.
Yeah. Because we all did sort of get into this sort of gloomy, like, as far as Kylo Ren's background for one. And, like, even, yeah, I think it made people think, okay, we're being cliche. Let's do better, please. So, Rex, as far as Rey Kenobi, you know, do you have anything deeper than just that she is his grandchild? Do you, like, who is her mother?
Oh,
who is
God.
Her grandmother? Do you have any...
No, I don't have any. No. I don't have any actual theories there. Just
I do.
Oh,
I do.
Good, because
there is a candidate to be her grandmother.
Oh,
there. Obi-Wan had a canonical love interest in the Clone Wars.
Oh, right.
She's the Duchess of Mandalore, Satine.
Jeez, I wonder where they got that name from.
I know. I love that.
Oh no.
It's very, oh, it's the way they do it in Clone Wars. It's beautiful. It's fabulous. They totally could have had a secret child.
Well,
it's very much he had to make a decision at one point whether to stay with her because he loved her or go be a Jedi. And he chose being a Jedi and they're both really pissed at each other about it. And it's beautiful.
Cool.
If anybody is the grandmother, it's totally her. And that's awesome.
I buy it.
Yeah.
No clue who the parent, who, you know, anything could have happened.
I mean, that's like 30 years, so
yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. It's a big black box.
Yeah, I mean, really, all you got to do, like, the main thing to figure out is, like, who the hell, you know, Obi-Wan hooked up with. Yeah. Everything else is just whatever.
Yeah, I mean...
right, you just can't wave your hands.
Yeah, whether or not that child was a boy or a girl, who they ended up with, that doesn't matter. Like, at that point, nobody really cares, other than the fact that, you know, they're Rey's parents.
Unless they become characters somehow.
Yeah, true. I mean, and that... could play into, you know, future seasons of Rebels or other books. I mean, that's the great thing about them, you know, reviving the books with the new canon. It's so much stuff can be fleshed out. And yeah, there's, I think, one other Rey, I'm going to say origin for this theory that I've heard. And that is that Rey... is actually a creation of the Force, much like Anakin Skywalker.
No.
Yeah. No? Just no. Flat out no?
I just flat out reject
it. Okay. I'm bringing it up because it's on my list. I just came up with a list of stuff that, you know, had been mentioned.
No more virgin babies.
I mean, because I just think that, yeah, it's one of the things that's on the list of things that people hate about the prequels. So,
yeah, totally.
Like, you know, it'd be like bringing Jar Jar Binks back.
Don't you know that's who Snoke is?
Of course. You know, actually, I would be down with that, too. I'd be like, that's cool. I'll do it.
Two birds with one stone.
Oh, man.
And, I mean, well, I was going to say, the other big theory, again, like the whole Rey is asexual, there's the point of she's nobody. Like, she literally says she's nobody,
oh, yeah.
And she really is. Which, there's an appeal to that, too. I know a lot of people have... I've seen a lot of people complain that, why are you trying to give her famous parents? She could just be anybody's kid. Which...
Yeah, I think that Rey, absolutely nobody would be disappointing, like, from a satisfaction level for the audience, because it's a question.
Yeah.
That was brought up, that's a big question, and even if it's a red herring question, it needs to be answered in a satisfying way.
Yeah, I mean, we've had 6 movies that established that families are a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So... And that we know these families and that they're interconnected, and it would just be really weird to, like, okay, here's this random person.
Yeah, I'd be fine with, like, Rey, nobody, as in her parents weren't Force sensitive or they weren't huge players, but we know who they are. That's one thing. But just she's just
this we've never heard of this person before. Yeah.
Mechanics, you know, child, and they died on Jack. You know, like I think that we need a satisfying answer, even if it's not a huge reveal.
I could see Rey's parents being students or acolytes of Luke's. If we're going to go with the Rey nobody theory, then I would think that there may be, you know, students of Luke's and that he is responsible for their deaths.
I think I'd like that.
The whole idea of this is a saga of family, it's really going, and I'm going to sound like a railo shipper, but you know, kind of am. It's all going to depend on what Rey's relationship ends up with Kylo and what Kylo's story ends up being, because it's very possible that the whole Skywalker saga is going to be played out through Kylo alone.
Kylo.
I mean, Pablo Hidalgo has suggested that that's the Skywalker that, you know, the story is focusing on. And while Rey is going to play an important part, she is not actually a part of that generational story herself. She's just kind of an outside player that affects things, which is perfectly fine, because the idea that every important thing in this galaxy happens to one family is just, I don't know.
I mean, well, that's how sagas work, though. I mean, sagas... I mean, that's what it is. It's one family. So, I mean, I can buy that. That's not a sticking point for me.
Well, just there's an argument to be made that Obi-Wan is a protagonist, if not the protagonist of the prequel trilogy.
That's so, very true.
So it would make sense, therefore, if one of his... It would have that sort of neat ring structure if one of his descendants had a major protagonistic role to play in the sequels.
It would also tie things nicely to the prequels without such as bringing Jar Jar into it, because I think one thing about the...
Not getting too specific about it, you mean?
Yeah, I mean, one thing about The Force Awakens is that it does, you know, bring in a lot of beats from all of the original trilogy, but it really kind of shies away from the prequels, because I think they are very afraid to bring things in. No matter what, the prequels are part of this story, and it's something that should not be ignored. We might have to try to rework things to make them more palpable for us, but yeah, we can't just ignore them. And having Rey Kenobi redeem Kylo Ren, that would work really well.
A nice touch.
Yeah.
That concludes the first half of our Rey roundtable. We had so much information that we had to split it into. Come back next month and we'll be talking about what Rey as a character meant to little girls and to women as representation. We'll talk about ships, and we'll talk a little bit about what we expect to see going forward in episode 8. Faster than the speeding of light, she's flying, trying to remember where it all began. She's got a simple little piece of hand. Well, that's our third episode of the Trash Compactor podcast, and as it turns out, this is a first. I should have seen this coming. We had such a great discussion with Rex Luskus and April and MC and I about Rey that we actually are going to have to split the discussion into two parts. So next month...
Cliffhanger. we're just going to turn around and, you know, put down our hoods and just stare.
That's right. It's just like episode 7. We're going to pick up right where we left off in the next episode. So yeah, so tune in next month where we'll talk about Rey and all of her ships. You know, we got into her family this time.
Wow, wow.
And we're going to have some Rex, of course, as always. This just kind of got out of control. I tried to see if there was stuff I could trim, but man, we were on fire. So you're getting two Rey episodes.
It was a wonderful discussion, and thank you to April and Rex for making it such a wonderful conversation.
Definitely.
And they will be back with us in the second half. So I think for now, If you want to tell us how we did, or if you have any other comments, you can drop us a line on Tumblr at trashcompactorpodcast.tumblr.com. You can hit us up on Twitter at SWTrashPodcast, at our website, trashcompactorpodcast.com, or through email at thetrashcompactorpodcast@gmail.com.
And definitely please do. We've gotten some great messages on Tumblr, so send us more. It makes us feel loved.
Yes. So I think that's it for this month.
Yeah, we'll see you next month with more Ray.
See you guys. Bye.
Bye. Ya 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 ya